Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Welcome, my wonderful, wonderful audience. It's me again, Peter Bregan, psychiatrist. Glad to be talking to all of you as I always, always am. And the show is Refounding America and Reclaiming Ourselves on Brighteon TV. Brighteon TV. And it's real TV, also seen on Roku. And if you're listening to me on the radio, you may be listening in to PRN.live or maybe someplace else that is going ahead and broadcasting me out into the world. I don't mention this usually, but I'm an unusual psychiatrist. I don't treat people with drugs. I help them with talk and conversation and relationship with their families. And I think that's just a wonderful way to work. And I do help people come off drugs, so I have a lot of experience in that area. An old friend of mine will be with us soon for this interview. Well, welcome aboard again to Refounding America, Reclaiming Ourselves with Peter Bregan. And you're looking at Patrick D. Hahn, H-A-H-N, and I guess you can see that on the screen, which is nice. And Patrick and I are kind of old friends, old warriors, going back not quite a decade. And we both transitioned somewhat from psychiatry to COVID. It's so interesting without ever talking to each other about it. Patrick has a particular honor in my life in that the first time they temporarily took me down off of, what's the name of that awful place again?
YouTube.
God bless YouTube. Before they took me down the first time, the first two shows I had done that they took me down for were for COVID. And then I had Patrick on about his wonderful book for antidepressants, and that was too much for them. They're hard to predict. So I'm proud that that first takedown involved partly my being the conscience of psychiatry and not just one of the many, many freedom fighters banded together, some of us not fighting the COVID-19 policies and depression. Patrick has two very good books behind him, one on ADHD, and one on antidepressants.
Well, actually, three. My first book was A History of Psychiatric Genetics.
Yes. And that, why don't you take over and just kind of briefly tell people what you've done in those books and your new book and when it will be coming out. And then we'll go on and talk about really interesting stuff. Two men that have been doing a lot of work in this area for a long time.
Yes, well, I am a teacher by profession, and I became aware of some capacities that were going unused. And at the preposterously advanced age of 51, I enrolled in the writing program at the Johns Hopkins University. And at the even more preposterously advanced age of 54, I walked across the stage and received my diploma. And since then, it's been just an amazing journey. And it just keeps getting more and more amazing. So my first book was A History of Psychiatric Genetics. It was titled Madness and Genetic Determinism: Is Mental Illness in Our Genes? So I kind of think of it as really like two books in one. So I trace the history of psychiatric genetics from its beginnings in the 19th century to the present day, and conclude that no way, no how are these conditions they call mental illnesses genetically based. And then I have to go back to the 18th century. And then I found the book concentrate on schizophrenia, what causes these complaints. And there's just a mountain of evidence that they are caused, not triggered, caused by child sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, and every other category of adverse childhood experience. So then I have to go back to the 18th century and trace the history of the other psychiatry that has a long history of treating these complaints called mental illness with empathy and compassion, which begins with St. Luke's in England in the middle of the 18th century and continues to this day with open dialogue therapy, which began in Finland, but now is spreading to many other countries. My second book was Prescription for Sorrow, Antidepressants, Suicide, and Violence. And my third book, which came out last April, was titled Obedience Pills, ADHD and the Medicalization of Childhood. And in fact, I wrote that while we were staying at home because of the COVID pandemic. And I was just disturbed by what was going on in this country, a full frontal assault on everything we need to live together as a community of intelligent, self-governing men and women. And I'd written some short articles and blog posts, but I hardly knew where to begin. This is a crisis that touches on every facet of our existence. Going from writing about antidepressants to writing about the COVID is like going from swimming laps in a pool to being parachuted into the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And last November, almost exactly a year ago, I attended the meeting of the expert panel convened by Senator Ron Johnson. And I attended his second expert panel meeting in February of this year. And I decided to concentrate on the vaccines. That's something my background somewhat equips me to understand. And I have to say that my writing about psychiatry was good training for this.
Yes.
Because all of the dirty tricks that I had become familiar with in writing about the psychopharmaceutical industry are on display here. Arguing from authority, hiding data, confusing a statistically significant result with a clinically relevant one, conflating the effects of a drug, and remember, vaccines are drugs, conflating the effects of a drug with those of a treatment, and when all else fails, smearing their opponents as know-nothings with QAnon standing in for Scientology. So it's been quite a ride. And I'd like to wrap up the book at the end of this month. I mean, this is going to go on for years and years. So at some arbitrarily selected point, I'm just going to have to declare myself finished.
So yes.
The book begins Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving 2020. And then I jump back to December 1st, 2019, the first day of the pandemic. And so I think it would be fitting to end the day after Thanksgiving 2022. That's my plan.
Well, I really, I've learned from your books and our interviews together over the years and I'm sure I'm going to learn a lot. What do you imagine as from your COVID-19 book? When do you imagine this publication?
I'm hoping early next year, but I don't have an agreement with the publisher, so we'll just have to see.
Yes, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, it's when I was shopping, when I was looking to publish my second book, I found that basically all mainstream, well, if you're looking, if you want a university press, if you have a medical book, they don't have a medical school, they're not going to be interested. And if they do have a medical school, they're not going to want to say anything that will anger the drug companies. And basically all mainstream nonfiction publishing in this company is controlled by three companies. And there's no way in without an agent. Yeah, it's going to take years to dig through all the Pfizer documents. They said it was, they said we'll show you the data in 75 years.
Yes.
And the judge said no and made them. So nothing like this has ever happened before. This is really something new. So it's going to take years to dig through all those documents.
Yes, and it assumes we even get to see, quote, all those documents. I cannot believe they don't go through and cull all kinds of things out in general. I don't know specifically about Pfizer in this case, but they're very wily, the drug companies. You know, I've been involved in so many lawsuits against them over the years and gone to court against them and written reports. They do hide stuff, as you say, and that... said initially, and they don't necessarily give you everything you would want.
Yeah, I also spoke to Kim Witchak, and Kim is a she's a patient. She became a patient advocate by accident. Her husband, she has experience with Pfizer's products. Her husband, Woody, had just landed his dream job at a startup. And in the excitement, he was having trouble sleeping. And his trusted family doc prescribed Zoloft. And he just started going crazy. And he said, I feel like my head is outside my body. And nobody connected this to the drug. He went to the garage and hanged himself. 37 years old. No history of depression or suicidality. And in the trial, in the process of discovery, they found out that Pfizer had noted this exact same effect in its trials of the drug. People said they were standing outside their bodies. They never told anybody. And so Kim became a patient advocate. She's actually on the advisory panel for the FDA. She's the consumer representative.
And Kim and I know each other, but like so many other people, kind of been left behind in my life as I moved on to, and Ginger onto COVID-19. I mean, it's amazing. And she's still there? They haven't gotten rid of her yet?
Yeah, she's also joined the fight. So, and I spoke to her, and she is also one of the founders of Public Health and Medical Professionals for Transparency.
I'll have to get in touch. Send me an email for Kim. It's been a while.
Okay, I'll do that. Yeah. Yeah. So we had a wonderful conversation, and she told me in detail about her experiences that led her to become an advocate.
It's interesting to see a number of people moving over and into these new issues. And it's interesting how I am not aware of a lot of the people you're mentioning having moved into this area too, but it makes complete sense. Once you've taken on the drug companies, as the people you've been mentioning have, then you get to see right away that it's not the way they're presenting themselves, not correct, not accurate.
Yeah, and this fax was approved. It was a total con job. When the data that was submitted for the emergency use authorization, they weren't claiming it reduced the rate of death. it increased the rate of serious adverse events. Pfizer's own data showed that. No endpoint for hospitalization, transmission, intubation. And in fact, there was no endpoint for COVID infection. That's a little sleight of hand they pulled that was right out in the open. And nobody commented on the time. The trial had no endpoint for COVID infection of any severity. The endpoint was COVID infection of any severity occurring at least 28 days after the first shot. So COVID infections the first 28 days after the shot don't count. Well, why on earth, and for the Moderna shot, it's 42 days. Hmm. Why on earth don't they count? Don't they count to the patient? You know, you don't start counting when you think the drug is supposed to kick in. You start at the moment of randomization. The start is the start. And this is there out in the open all along, and nobody said anything at the time.
Are people saying much about it now?
Actually, no.
That's my impression.
Yeah.
No. Now, that is interesting because the risk starts immediately.
Yeah.
The risk of a really even, you know, severe adverse effects, including getting COVID.
And in Scotland, when after they had in over seven patients over 70, almost 100% people over 70 had received at least one shot, and cases were at a record high. And there were experts who warned this might happen. It's called, well, two processes, original antigenic sin and antibody-dependent enhancement. Now, original antigenic sin means when you develop, when you get exposed to a pathogen, whether it's through being infected or vaccination, and then you get infected with another strain of the same pathogen, your body will make antibodies to the first strain. It's as if the immune system, once it's trained to see one variant, can only see that variant. And original antigenic sin, or excuse me, antibody-dependent enhancement, is a process in which the body produces antibodies that bind only weakly to the pathogen. And then the cells will, so it binds without neutralizing it. So the cells take up the virus, and the virus does what viruses do, turns that cell into a factory for manufacturing more viruses, and actually can make the infection worse. And that's been documented for a number of other viruses, and most of them are positive stranded RNA viruses, just like coronavirus.
Yeah, we talked about that back in April 2020 because they had found in animal experiments, one in 2015, that animals who were exposed to COVID, it was before, obviously, before COVID, 19, but animals that were exposed to the SARS-CoV virus is what we were talking about then, often died when then given a vaccination with it. And some of it was with the mRNA kind of stuff, and some of it was with the, you know, the killed virus or the partially killed virus. It just did not work well at all with the COVID disorders and the SARS-CoV disorders. And we warned about it way, way back. Because no one in power was paying attention to the whole line of research that was saying, don't give these things to humans, because there was a considerable amount of research in that direction.
Yeah, in my book, I've got quotes from experts who warned us that this might happen. And
Vax
was rushed onto the market. The trials were supposed to involve, the Pfizer trial was supposed to involve 44,000 subjects and go on for 2 years. And it was canceled after 7% of the subjects made it to the 6-month mark. That's it. That's all the randomized controlled trial data that we're going to get. And the Moderna, something very similar. I don't remember the exact numbers, but more or less the same thing.
And you know, it's also very similar to the drug testing for remdesivir. I mean, that didn't meet any of its endpoints that it was supposed to. Endpoints, folks, are the standards you set initially for success, such as the, you know, saving lives or reducing adverse effects or whatever. And Moderna, and this is entirely under Fauci's control. This is entirely a Fauci project at NIAID under NIH. And they changed the endpoint to reduces the hospital stay by a day and a half or something. And their endpoints included patients who were in the hospital, but not on medication anymore. Patients who were at home getting respiratory help and were partially disabled. It's bizarre. It's evil. And then they go ahead and they give hospitals extra money for giving a deadly drug while they were suppressing giving really very safe and effective drugs like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. So it's like a little beyond belief. And as I listened to two of us talking, if somebody came in on this conversation, they'd be saying, these guys are making all this up. I mean, what are they talking about? This happened in the world? What year was that?
Yeah, and that's why I was talking about the dirty tricks of the drug companies that I learned about by writing about psychiatry. I could have mentioned switching endpoints. That's another one of their favorite tactics. And of course, until Paxlovid came out.
Hey, we're coming to the end. I'm just glancing up. Let's go to Paxlovid when we come back. Thank you, Patrick Hahn. Well, we're back with Patrick Hahn, old friend, great researcher, brave man. Let me mention our book. At some point I always think, what is Ginger reminding me of? And it's to mention our book. Our book is COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. We're over 120,000 in sales now, which is just amazing for a book published by Ginger Breggin in her own publishing company. We just knew we would not be able to get it through any of the normal resources. And it is still, I haven't seen Patrick's book yet, but it's still the deepest dive. Even Bobby Kennedy has endorsed it for that, the deepest dive into what he called the criminal conspiracies behind COVID-19. Now, the thing is, if you read this book, you're going to learn about a lot of everything that's coming down the pipeline, because the groups we're identifying as being behind the COVID mess, the same ones that are behind the global warming, they're the same ones who are behind the Ukrainian war, and all the massive money that's being laundered through Ukraine back to the military-industrial complex, back to the oligarchs who are part of the global regime that this really stands above the nations. We call them the global predators. So reading COVID-19 and the global predators, We Are the Prey, will keep informing you about what's going on, because it's the deepest dive into the global predators. And our next book will be a continuation on that theme about globalism in a way that other people have not yet, I don't think, looked at it. And you can get the book on Amazon. You can get it to listen to it. You can get it to read it electronically. We got the whole works on Amazon. And you can also buy it directly from us at a reduced price, if you like. And to do that, you go to wearethepray.com. That's our dedicated website to get the book at a reduced price, so, and directly from us. People like to buy now when they can from the people themselves that are making things. And we made this book for you. So wearethepray.com. You were talking about the difficulty, Patrick, that you were having, you and I were about, you know, how do you find a publisher in this day and age? And it's certainly excruciatingly difficult to do. Maybe at some point off camera, we can talk a little bit about that. But I don't have a lot of ideas. I mean, but it's important. We can maybe think about it a little bit together. You were talking about some of the other vaccines and treatments I think you were going to get into.
Yeah.
You're an amazing source, encyclopedic. You've always been so crisp and so on target in the way you present facts. Let us hear some more.
Yeah, until Paxlovid was approved, the only outpatient treatment for COVID approved was low-dose dexamethasone, and that was it. And Peter McCullough had tremendous success treating patients with ivermectin. That's a drug that's been on the market for I'm sorry. I think he used hydroxychloroquine.
He was more hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah, hydroxychloroquine. Other doctors. I heard from these doctors at the meetings of the expert panel who used ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and had great success. And it was totally bizarre until Paxlovid was approved. The official CDC recommendations were: if you test positive for COVID, go home. And if you get to the point we're having trouble breathing, come to the hospital and we'll think about doing something for you. And that's totally bizarre. And
the prescription for mass murder.
Yeah. And the FDA's own guy. I mean, of course, if you have a new virus, of course, there's not going to be any drugs specifically approved to treat that virus. But the FDA's own recommendations say encourage doctors to prescribe medicines off-label when there's
an
approved remedy, except in this one case. And it's not just ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. COVID kills through clotting and inflammation. Well, doesn't the medical profession have any drugs to treat clotting and inflammation?
Exactly.
And there's just this massive effort in the media to smear the doctors who were working on the front lines treating COVID. And the reason for that is because you can only get emergency use authorization for a drug if there are no approved remedies on the market. So that was the key to getting the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines approved.
Yeah, they wanted to put off any effective treatment because whenever legislation creates emergency alternatives, they usually have something to say like providing there's nothing else currently available. That's the whole idea behind an emergency. And they had both hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin available in the beginning. It was working very well. 75% of deaths were avoided, 85% of hospitalizations were avoided, and they had a whole protocol which doctors use. My dear beloved friend Zev Zelenko, now gone, you know, developed this whole protocol. And then my friend McCullough, both people who wrote introductions to our book, by the way, I'm so proud of that, along with Lee Valit, another great doc, Elizabeth Lee Valit. And it's just a very strange thing. They even for a time, Patrick, remember, outlawed, well, they couldn't outlaw it because they don't have any power, but they threatened physicians from the FDA and or NIH, I'm not sure which one, not to use steroids. That is the dexamethasone you were mentioning. So they were really out to destroy patients and make them wait for the costly drugs that was known to be very dangerous. This earlier drug that I talked to you about that Fauci was pushing, a drug that had had to be taken out of a study in another viral disease because it was killing patients. What were you saying?
What drug is that?
The oh Lord, I'm just blocking on the name. I mentioned it earlier. The
Remdesivir.
Remdesivir. Thank you. And that had been used in an Ebola trial. And they had to take it out because compared to two or three other drugs in the trial, it was killing too many people were dying. And Fauci knew all that. And he knew that there was a Lancet study showing remdesivir didn't work, a clinical trial. And now, of course, the World Health Organization has says it doesn't work. Even WHO, I'm not sure why they got honest all of a sudden, but they probably had their own corrupt reasons for it. But even with the WHO saying, our largest trial ever does not show it's effective, we're not recommending it, and yet they are forcing it on people against their will in hospitals in America. And the hospitals are getting bonuses, I think, from the drug company, maybe the insurance company, I'm not sure, for using. I've got to look into that some more. Maybe you know about that. But it's just a horrible situation, folks.
A respirator, they get a much bigger reimbursement.
They get respirators. They get a reimbursement if the patient dies. They get reimbursed if the patient's diagnosed with COVID. So if you've been in an accident and these crummy tests show that you got COVID, they get a reimbursement even though you haven't got any symptoms. Yeah, even though you don't really have COVID because there's so many false positives. Yeah.
Dramatically overcount cases of COVID.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is going to lead to a systematic exaggeration of the benefits, the harm ratio of the vaccine.
Yeah. So the overall, I mean, this is not about mistakes, honestly. It's not about irrational actions. It's not on the part of the people who develop these policies. The policies are developed by extraordinarily wealthy corporations, extraordinarily wealthy, powerful people, often working with the Chinese communists, often working with the UN, often working with the World Health Organization. This is what we describe in COVID-19 and the predators,
yeah,
global predators.
Yeah, and at this point, I'd like to mention my own experience with that.
Yes, please do.
Oh, I medically, it made no sense for me to get the shot. I'd already had the COVID. I'd recovered fully without any lasting ill effects. But I got the shot to protect my health. Because if I didn't get it, I would have been unemployed and broke and homeless. That's hazardous to my health.
Yeah, very.
29 years of teaching, I never missed a day of work due to illness. Less than 30 days after my booster, I had a stroke. And the strokes, of course, the reports of ischemic stroke to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting Database has skyrocketed since the vaccine was rolled out.
Yeah.
Something like 98% of reports in the first year of the vaccine rollout were for the COVID vaccine.
How are you doing now? People will want to know. How are you doing now? We've talked about it, but the folks need to know.
Well, for a few months after my stroke, I told people I felt good as new, and I did. That is no longer the case. The dizzy spells are becoming more and more frequent, and I'm dealing with memory lapses I did not have before the booster shot.
How are you dealing with that?
Just keep putting one foot in front of the other. So yeah, neither Vaerse nor Moderna has followed up on my adverse event report.
Wow. No, they don't want to hear any of that stuff. And that's another thing, folks. I mean, this true story about all this is so sickening. There were efforts, you know, to get the FDA to respond to Freedom of Information Act requests and other things about what are they doing in regard to all these buildup of deaths and other adverse effects. That's the ultimate adverse effect. And finally, CDC wrote a response saying, we are not using the VAERS. To evaluate the vaccines.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been following that closely.
Oh, God.
Both the CDC and the FDA promised, CDC promised to carry out proportional report ratio analysis every week. FDA promised to carry out empirical based data mining of VAERS data twice a week. Now, and we're not sure if they did it. In in May of this year, the Children's Health Defense filed a Freedom of Information Act, and CD said, no, we don't do proportion, we don't analyze the data. Then in July, John Hsu, who's the head of VAERS, told the Epoch Times that they had been collecting the data, but nobody's seen the data. So it's very, and Senator Johnson sent a letter, in May, they said they had not analyzed the data, and Senator Johnson sent one of his, sent a letter to them demanding to know why not, and they ignored it, just as they've ignored his 35 other oversight letters. And then in July, as I said, John Hsu, the head of VAERS, said, we have been carrying out this analysis. And Senator Johnson fired off another letter and demanded to know, where is the date? Where is the analysis? And that's where it stands, as far as I know. The data has not been made. The analysis has not been made.
It's stunning. And of course, all you have to do is eyeball the data. In the past, if you had a few deaths from a vaccine, the CDC would be all over it. And in no case would they let a drug stay on the market if it had 20 or 30 reported deaths. I mean, sometimes they took the drug off the market temporarily, at least to explore the possibility it might cause a death due to a contamination of some kind. In this case, within a very short time, there are thousands of deaths being reported to the CDC. Last I looked, it was about a total of something over 30,000. The CDC claiming that half of them, or a little fewer than half, were coming from overseas, still leaving a huge number in this country. Nothing like this has ever been seen before for the FDA or the CDC to ignore even a few deaths, let alone really tens of thousands that are being reported to the CDC right now. It is, again, something you can't just dismiss and say these people don't know what they're doing. They do know what they're doing. They had warnings right up till 2020 in the scientific literature not to try these vaccines on people, right when they were getting ready to try them. They knew what they were doing all along. And so you have to start thinking things. I don't know how you feel about this, Patrick, but you got to start thinking about things like, well, intentional culling of the population, intentional getting rid of the useless eaters, older people like me, and maybe getting to be you soon, Patrick, that, you know, they don't think we're productive because we're older. It could be just some of it, orneriness. When people get such power, they do mean things. This is the story of empires. Empires, the leaders of empires murder people wantonly as well as for purposes, political purposes.
About that recently. I mean, since time immemorial, nations conquered other nations and built empires. And the ones that were not good at it got stomped on by the ones that were. Mm-hmm. You grew or you died. That was a moral imperative.
Yeah.
And like it or not, that's how the modern world was built. But it just seems to me that this process has been complete. Little kids, the world has been conquered. Little kids in mud huts in African villages are now online. I have seen this. There's no more spots on the map marked "here be tigers." And the only terrain left for would-be tyrants to conquer is our own bodies. Yeah, I mean, there's never been a time when the wealthy and powerful cared about common people, but there was a natural break on personal ambition. They did want a strong nation, and I don't think they want that anymore.
Well, no, I mean, It's been announced by many of the globalists, including the good old arch enemy at the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab. It's been announced that the biggest things standing in the way of globalism are constitutional democracies, a patriotic, freedom-loving constitutional democracy like the U.S. used to be, is not going to put up with globalism. And what people think of as the current populism was and still is a response in good part to globalism. And one of the reasons why Trump immediately got hit with so much unusual attacks, fabricated attacks, and eventually, you know, with these two congressional attempts to destroy him. This happened, I believe, because he early on announced that he was not for globalism. And it had to do with the Koch family, who are supposed libertarians, supposed freedom-loving libertarians, who have been financing the old-school Republicans who were globalists. And all, you know, even the Bush family, you don't have to go to the Democrats, even the Bush families have benefited, the extended families from their presidents holding office, the two Bushes. So, you know, and Trump came out and, you know, said, of course the Kochs aren't supporting me. He says, nice people. Nice. He's so funny. Nice people. But I don't care if they don't support me. I'm against globalism. And so the Kochs come out for open borders, the most destructive thing you can do to a nation, showing what globalists they are, claiming to be freedom-loving people. Almost none of these people claim to be patriots, though. They can't get the words out of their mouth. And so that's what this, that's why they want to destroy these nations, Patrick. I don't know how much you've been into all of that, but that's one of the themes of our book and of the work we're still doing is what's at stake here is the destruction of America. And clearly the current progressives and very much our president himself, you know, has benefited so much from corruption with his family and with other countries, China, the Ukraine, Russia, the family taking in millions and millions and millions of dollars. Biden family is very wealthy now, and none of them have earned it. They get it by having influence.
Yeah, Naomi Wolf explained it very well in her book, The Bodies of Others.
Another wonderful book, good book.
The best system ever devised for governing people is the nation state, with a specific group of elected leaders accountable to a specific group of voters. And they're destroying that every way they can. The biggest mass migrations in history. And that's not helping anybody except maybe the 1%, or maybe it's the 1% of the 1% who want to control.
1% of the 1%. Yeah. Well, that's right, because all these big disruptions, they make cheap labor available. They make it easy to shift around money, get the government to spend money, which eventually ends once again in the pockets of the elites. I've been looking at the banking industry and global banking. Global banking is a way of soaking the laboring classes and the working classes throughout the world and the poorer countries around the world by, in part, giving them loans, which they have to pay for, and the money goes to the oligarchs in charge of the poor countries. It's a mess out there. Patrick Hahn, we are finishing. Thank you so much for being with me today. You're always educational.